Eddie, the Collegiate Sophomore. Chapter 5. Another chapter closed. The evidence against Mr. Crum is quite extensive, to say the least. The derelict former high school principal has been caught red-handed picking up a drug drop at one of the abandoned houses on 2nd Street, the street where he formerly lived. It was well known to the police that the drugs dropped off at 2nd Street were the same drugs distributed at the high school. The police knew exactly who was dropping off the goods on 2nd Street. The police knew Andrew Goldstein and Paul Mahoney, along with a few others, were dealers, distributing exactly what was dropped off. But the police could never figure out who was picking up the drop at the abandoned houses on 2nd Street until Eddie casually mentioned to Officer Richard Hayes that Mr. Crum lives on 2nd Street. Changing their stakeout location, the police caught Mr. Crum picking up the drop red-handed. After Eddie purchased all four lots on 2nd Street, he had Mark demolish the houses and clear the lots. Kathy and Paula had a good time destroying a few of the houses. The houses were loaded into dumpsters and ended up in the county landfill. Mr. Crum claimed to have tens of thousands of dollars in cash in his home, which ended up in the dump along with the demolished houses. The police sent a detective and some heavy equipment out to the landfill to verify whether Mr. Crum's claim was true. Along with finding the remains of Mr. Crum's house, they found a little more than $58,000 in locked metal boxes and a supply of drugs. As it turns out, many of the bills were marked. Not only were the bills used in drug transactions, but many of them were used to place bets in a sophisticated gambling ring. One of the charges against Mr. Crum is that he actively rigged the outcome of sporting events. No one knows this better than John Davies, who lost a football scholarship because Mr. Crum suspended him. John Davies, who was the high school's star quarterback, was on target to get a scholarship to a major university. Even though Davies was of legal age and school was not in session, Mr. Crum suspended him for drinking a beer while on school grounds. When Davies was not allowed to play in the divisional semifinals, Northside High School, who was expected to win the game, lost by a score of 63-6. Representing Mr. Crum, the defendant, today is attorney Louis Pohl. Known around town as a Philadelphia lawyer, Mr. Pohl is a very shrewd attorney who is an expert in the exploitation of legal technicalities. Mr. Pohl, however, is not quite the expert in the law that he purports to be. Instead, attorney Lou Pohl, as his name suggests, finds loopholes in the law, getting his client off. Hired by Mr. Crum's rich uncle, Alastair Crum, Mr. Pohl is working hard to get Mr. Crum off the hook. The district attorney bringing the charges against Mr. Crum is attorney Janet Sims. She is assisted by attorney John Davies, who is working pro bono for this case. Mr. Davies still has the evidence his father compiled and took to the school board when John was not allowed to play in the divisional semifinals. The evidence was substantial enough to cause the school board to hire Mr. Zunday as the school's athletic director. Mr. Zunday reports directly to the school board, taking Mr. Crum out of the chain of command between the coaches and the high school administration. The prosecution has the burden to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. In the preliminary hearing, the gambling charges against Mr. Crum were dropped due to a technicality. Mr. Lou Pohl, the attorney for Mr. Crum, argued that the money found in the dump cannot be entered as evidence in the case. Mr. Pohl's defense is that, if the money was found in the county landfill, it cannot be concluded that it was originally found in Mr. Crum's house. Worse yet, Mr. Crum claimed that the locked boxes containing the money were not his. Reminded that he filed a police report reporting the missing boxes of money after his house was torn down, Mr. Crum claimed that his boxes were a different type. No one really believed Mr. Crum, but, nevertheless, the gambling charges had to be dropped. The charges brought against Mr. Crum for possession of, with intent to distribute, illicit drugs is a different story. The evidence is overwhelming, with years of detective work ready to be presented by the prosecution. Mr. Pohl is well aware of the evidence against Mr. Crum. Advising Mr. Crum to plead guilty, Mr. Pohl assured Mr. Crum that he could negotiate a more lenient sentence. Mr. Pohl's reasoning is that no jury will have any sympathy whatsoever for a drug-dealing school principal. Alistair Crum, Mr. Crum's uncle who is paying Attorney Pohl's bill, has a completely different viewpoint. Alistair wants to get Mr. Crum acquitted. The day of Mr. Crum's trial arrives. Present in the courtroom are Captain Gabriel, Officer Richard Hayes, and Detective Garrison, who all played a big part in the investigation into Mr. Crum. Kathy and Eddie are also present, curious to learn the fate of the chronically irate principal who made their lives so miserable for many years. They are joined by Mark and Paula. Braden also decided to attend Mr. Crum's trial, if only to gain experience in the courtroom. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday are also present and are on the official witness list. And sitting in the back of the courtroom is Alistair Crum, who is curious to learn the fate of his troubled nephew. At exactly 9 o'clock, the bailiff announces, "All rise." Eddie and Kathy stand, as does Mark and Paula. Officer Braden, in uniform today, also stands. The bailiff proclaims, "Hear ye, hear ye. This court is now in session." The judge takes his seat at the bench and strikes his gavel. Eddie whispers to Mark, "He has a hammer. Maybe you can put him to work." Mark whispers back, "You can't even call that thing a tack hammer." A few announcements are made as Mr. Crum sits nervously at the defendant's table with his attorney. The clerk swears in the jury, and the trial of Mr. Crum begins. The judge announces, "In the case of the state versus Mr. Maurice Crum, how does the defendant plead?" In opposition to the sound advice given to him by his attorney, Mr. Crum, speaking for himself, announces, "Not guilty, Your Honor." Kathy whispers to Eddie, "I can't wait to hear what his defense will be." Eddie whispers back, "He has no defense. He's just going to claim, it wasn't me." Kathy replies, "Yeah. Or, it must have been someone who looked just like me." Attorney Janet Sims announces, "Your Honor, the state is ready to proceed in the case against Maurice Crum." The judge announces, "Very well. Call your first witness, Counselor." Attorney Sims announces, "The prosecution calls to the stand Mr. Maurice Crum." Mr. Crum stands and approaches the witness stand, both smiling and with great confidence. As Mr. Crum is sworn in, Kathy whispers to Eddie, "That guy has never told the truth in his life, and he's going to start now." Eddie whispers back, "I don't know what he's going to say, but he's going to make a fool out of himself." Kathy whispers to Eddie, "He's really good at that." Attorney Sims asks Mr. Crum, "Will you please state your name for the record?" Mr. Crum replies, "Maurice Crum. I was the principal at Northside High for 17 years, until I was set up." The judge tells Mr. Crum, "Mr. Crum, please restrain your answer to only the question that is asked." Mr. Crum replies, "Yeah, okay." The judge also instructs Mr. Crum, "And when asked a question that requires the answer yes or no, please confine your answer to such." Thinking that he is running the courtroom, Mr. Crum tells the judge, "Okay. Let's get on with this." The judge quickly admonishes Mr. Crum, "Mr. Maurice Crum. Let's get something straight. Please be advised that I run this courtroom, not you. Am I understood? Yes or no?" Mr. Crum replies, "Yes. Yes." The judge quickly understands the inherent belligerence of the defendant, Mr. Crum. Unfortunately, so does the jury. Kathy whispers to Eddie that old Crum is just as arrogant as he ever was. Eddie replies, "They ought to just lock him up now and save everyone the time and trouble." Kathy and Eddie listen as Mr. Crum belligerently answers a few basic questions posed by the prosecution. Attorney Sims, showing Mr. Crum the package containing the drugs dropped off in an abandoned house on 2nd Street that he retrieved, asks, "Maurice Crum, do you recognize this package?" Mr. Crum glances at the package and replies, no. Attorney Sims asks again, please take a closer look, sir. Do you recognize this package? Mr. Crum again replies, no. Knowing that the package was in Mr. Crum's possession, Attorney Sims asks, you're maintaining, sir, that you've never seen this package? Mr. Crum replies, never. Attorney Sims asks Mr. Crum, so, your official position is that you have never seen this package before. And, let me remind you, sir, that you are under oath. Mr. Crum replies, as I said, I've never seen that package before. Quite frustrated, Attorney Sims instructs Mr. Crum, please take a closer look at the package, sir. Attorney Pohl, Mr. Crum's attorney, confidently orates, objection, your honor. The judge asks, and just what is your objection? Attorney Pohl responds, the prosecution is badgering the witness. It was dark out. Even if my client was in possession of that package, he couldn't possibly recognize the package. He's never seen that package in the light. He cannot be sure whether he's seen it before. The judge replies, sustained. The judge tells Attorney Sims, please rephrase your question and move on. Attorney Sims asks, Mr. Crum, has this package ever been in your possession? Mr. Crum reluctantly replies, yes. I suppose it was. But, I didn't know what was in it. Mr. Crum is being a very difficult witness. Attorney Sims asks, are you stating that you did not know what was in a package that you left your house at 3:12 a.m. to retrieve from an abandoned house next to yours? Mr. Crum replies, yes. Realizing that Mr. Crum is being very difficult, Attorney Sims asks, were you aware that there were drugs, banned substances, and pharmaceuticals in the package that you, yourself, retrieved and brought back to your house? Mr. Crum replies, no. I didn't know what was in the package. No one expects anyone to believe Mr. Crum, who sadly believes his sly answers will get him out of going to jail. Attorney Sims then instructs Mr. Crum, please explain to the court why you left your house at 3:12 a.m., entered the abandoned house next to yours on 2nd Street, retrieved this package, and brought it back to your house. Mr. Crum replies, I can't. Attorney Sims asks, very well then. Please explain to the court why you can't provide an explanation. Mr. Crum replies, I can't remember picking up the package. Attorney Sims reminds Mr. Crum, Maurice Crum, according to the police report, and multiple witnesses, this package was in your possession at the time the police arrested you. She then asks, do you remember getting arrested by the police at your home? Mr. Crum replies, yes. Attorney Sims asks again, you remember getting arrested, but you claim that you do not remember retrieving this package from the abandoned house next to yours. Mr. Crum confidently replies, I can't remember. I must have been sleepwalking. Having enough of Mr. Crum's nonsense, Attorney Sims requests of the judge, your honor, I request that the defendant be treated as a hostile witness. The judge replies, your request is approved, counselor. Please continue, if you can. Apparently, the judge has had enough of Mr. Crum, and the trial just started. By being admitted as a hostile witness, the prosecution is granted a greater latitude in the line of questioning. Getting absolutely nowhere with Mr. Crum at the moment, Attorney Sims announces, I tender the witness, Your Honor. I do, however, reserve the right to recall this witness at a later time. The judge tells Mr. Pohl, Your witness, Counselor. Mr. Pohl responds, I have no questions for this witness at this time, Your Honor. The judge announces, the witness may step down. Believing that he just got himself off the hook, Mr. Crum smugly smiles as he walks off the witness stand. The judge tells Attorney Sims, you may call your next witness, Counselor. Attorney Sims announces, the prosecution calls Detective William Garrison to the stand. In charge of the entire investigation into Mr. Crum's drug dealing operation, Detective Garrison is a key witness. Detective Garrison walks up to the witness stand and is advised that, since he is an officer of the law, he is already sworn in. Attorney Sims extensively questions Detective Garrison, getting actual answers to her questions. Attorney Pohl cross-examines Detective Garrison and quickly finds the evidence against Mr. Crum is rock solid. After nearly an hour of examination and cross-examination, Kathy tells Eddie, "This is really getting boring. Why doesn't Crum just plead guilty?" Eddie replies, "I don't know. But it looks like they are done with Garrison." Eddie laughs, prompting Kathy to ask, "What's so funny?" Eddie explains, "A Garrison linkage is a fictitious auto part. So is a Johnson rod." Kathy laughs, but tries to do so very quietly. Seeing the next witness approach the stand, Eddie whispers to Kathy, "Here comes the good stuff. Richard is next." Officer Richard Hayes has been very instrumental in collecting evidence and forming the case against Mr. Crum. As Officer Hayes takes the stand, he is questioned by both Attorney John Davies and Attorney Sims and cross-examined by Attorney Pohl. Another 45 minutes go by and Officer Hayes steps down and Captain Gabriel takes the stand. Kathy is now really getting bored. Captain Gabriel testifies for 30 minutes, then steps down. The judge tells Attorney Sims, "You may call your next witness, Counselor." Attorney Sims announces, "The prosecution calls Andrew Goldstein to the stand." Goldstein walks up to the witness stand and is sworn in and asks some preliminary questions. Kathy is in shock, whispering to Eddie, "What is he doing here?" Eddie whispers back, "I don't know. But you probably won't be bored anymore." Paula whispers to Mark, "This is going to get really good." Andrew Goldstein, not surprisingly, has been picked up again for dealing drugs. Immediately after being released from prison, Goldstein was watched carefully by the police. Going back to his old way of life, it didn't take long for Goldstein to get picked up again. In exchange for his testimony against Mr. Crum, Goldstein has struck a plea bargain deal with the district attorney in the current case against him. Attorney Sims asks Goldstein, "Mr. Goldstein, do you recognize the defendant?" Goldstein replies, "Yeah, yeah. That's the Crumster." The judge reminds Goldstein to reply by using the words yes or no. Attorney Sims asks, "By the Crumster, do you intend to identify Mr. Maurice Crum, the defendant?" Goldstein replies, "Yeah, yeah. Mr. Crum, the Crumster. That's him." Recognizing Goldstein's demeanor, the judge instructs, "Unless there is an objection, the court reporter will record Mr. Goldstein's answers exactly as he presents them to the court." No objection is made, and the trial continues. It's not likely that anyone is going to get Goldstein to use proper English. Attorney Sims instructs Goldstein, "Please tell the court of your past business arrangements with the defendant, Mr. Crum." Goldstein explains, "Yeah, yeah. The Crumster supplied the drugs, and I sold them. Yeah. The Crumster would deliver the goods to me on Monday morning. Yeah, that's how it went down. And I got a bonus if I unloaded them all by Friday afternoon. Yeah, yeah." Kathy whispers to Eddie, "That little shithead." Eddie whispers back, "Which one? Crum or Goldshit?" Kathy whispers to Eddie, "Both." Kathy is clearly upset, but she hasn't heard anything yet. Attorney Sims instructs Goldstein, "Please tell the court how long you were selling drugs for Maurice Crum." Goldstein replies, "My whole senior year. That was the gig. Yeah. I had to go to Northside because the judge put me there. They wouldn't let me go back to my old school. Yeah, yeah. That's how it was." What Goldstein does not know is that the judge required Goldstein to go to Northside High School at the request of the police department in order to break the drug distribution ring wide open. Attorney Sims asks, "Exactly what drugs did you sell for Mr. Crum?" Goldstein replies, I pushed bennies, pot, cubes, and a lot of codeine. The girls really liked the codeine. Yeah, yeah. Codeine. I couldn't keep enough of that around. I picked that shit up from the Crumster on Monday, and I was out by Wednesday. Yeah, yeah. And other stuff too. But yeah, that's where I made the big bucks. Goldstein is questioned quite extensively by attorney Sims, who is extracting more evidence against Mr. Crumb than originally expected. Attorney Sims then announces, at this time, Your Honor, I would like to turn this witness over to my co-counsel. The judge tells Mr. Davies that he may proceed. Purely to make a point, Attorney Davies steps up to further question Goldstein. Attorney Davies asks, Mr. Goldstein, were there any other financial arrangements between you and Mr. Crumb, the school principal, other than transactions involving the sale and distribution of drugs? Goldstein replies, yeah, yeah. I pulled off a few other jobs for the Crumster. And he paid me really good. Acting quite surprised, Mr. Davies, who already knows the answer, asks, really? Please tell the court of those arrangements. Not knowing where Attorney Davies is going with this line of questioning, Attorney Pohl interrupts, exclaiming, Objection, Your Honor. Wanting to hear where Attorney Davies is going with his line of questioning, the judge quickly replies, Overruled. The judge instructs Goldstein, Please answer the question. Goldstein explains, The Crumster paid me $250 to take out Egghead, Bark, and the head of the Goon Squad. He told me to try out for the track team and take those guys out. Yeah, yeah. He said he didn't care how I did it. Attorney Davies instructs Goldstein, Mr. Goldstein, will you please tell the court who Egghead, Bark, and the head of the Goon Squad are? Looking around the courtroom, Goldstein, pointing to Eddie, answers, yeah, yeah. Sure. Egghead is that big guy sitting over there. And Bark is over there too, sitting with him, as he points to Mark. Eddie and Mark, knowing Goldstein is referring to them, wave to the court. Attorney Davies asks, and the head of the Goon Squad. Who would that be? Pointing to Braden, Goldstein replies, yeah, yeah. That's him over there in the cop uniform. Yeah, that's him. He's the guy that busted up my jaw. That kind of sucked. Braden stands, identifying himself as the head of the Goon Squad. With Braden's charismatic personality on the track, it's easy to understand that he is the head of something. Attorney Davies tells the court, let the record reflect that Mr. Goldstein identified Edward Bogenskaya as Egghead, Mark Svoboda as Bark, and Officer Axel Braden as the head of the Goon Squad. Attorney Davies asks, Just to clarify, was that $250 apiece? Goldstein replies, yeah, yeah. $250 apiece. And I got Charles to help me. He threw the javelin stick at Egghead during track practice. Charles took out Egghead for a few weeks, and Bark for a few days, and some other guy. Yeah, yeah. I split the brass with Charles. I got $500 for that one. It's too bad that Egghead took out Charles. Yeah, yeah. But that was his problem. I'm glad it wasn't mine. I guess Charles paid his dues. Attorney Davies asks, and who is Charles? Goldstein replies, yeah, yeah. Charles. Charles Black. Those guys called him the Chucky. He didn't like that. Listening to Goldstein's testimony, Eddie becomes extremely irate. So do Mark, Kathy, and Paula. Eddie whispers to Kathy, So, Crumb was behind that shit all along. Kathy whispers, What a piece of shit. Mark whispers to Paula, I should have kicked the shit out of Gold Shit when I had the chance. What an asshole. Paula whispers back, And, Crumb. Can you believe all this shit? Mr. Crumb yells out from the defense's table, he's lying. I did not. The judge hammers his gavel, and proclaims, "Order in the court. Order in the court. Counselor, please control your client. Otherwise, I will charge him with contempt." Attorney Pohl replies, "Understood, Your Honor. I apologize for my client's outburst." Attorney Pohl tells Mr. Crum, "Maurice, please remain calm. You'll get your chance to refute anything he says. Just be patient. Maybe Mr. Crum will get a chance to refute Goldstein's claim, and maybe he won't. But it doesn't matter too much, as the police have already presented an airtight case against Mr. Crum. The evidence presented in this case has clearly put Mr. Crum in a very bad mood." Attorney Davies asks Goldstein, "Were there other instances in which money was exchanged for favors for Mr. Crum?" Attorney Pohl again interrupts, exclaiming, "Objection, Your Honor. Mr. Davis' line of questioning is outside of the scope of this trial." The judge asks Attorney Davies, "Where are you going with this, counselor?" Attorney Davies responds, "I'm trying to discover why Mr. Crum would spend the money he profited from selling drugs on attempting to physically injure another student or students, particularly those on the track team. Who knows? There could have been a competitor for Mr. Crum's drug empire on the track team. The behavior appears out of character for a high school principal." The judge proclaims, "I will allow it. Mr. Goldstein, please answer the question." Recalling when Braden kicked his ass, Goldstein replies, "Yeah, yeah. The Crumster paid me $250 to take out the goon squad boss man. He was running, and I tripped him. He went down. Yeah, yeah. But the goon squad boss busted up my jaw. The Crumster gave me, yeah, I think an extra $250 because I got the shit kicked out of me. He also told me that I would pass all my classes and graduate. Yeah, yeah. He said that. But they failed me in gym class and physics. I got a bum rap out of that one. Yeah. A real bum rap. I was supposed to graduate." Attorney Davies asks Goldstein, "Physics class is quite an advanced class in high school. Did you want to take physics class?" Goldstein replies, "No, no. That shit's hard." Appearing surprised, Attorney Davies then instructs Goldstein, "Please explain to the court why you enrolled in a class you did not want to or have to take." Goldstein replies, "Yeah, yeah. The Crumster wanted me in that class. He told me to take it. Yeah, yeah. And he told me I would pass. He said he'd fix the grades if he had to." Now understanding who was really behind tripping him on the track, Braden becomes quite angered. Holding his head in his hands and looking at the floor, Braden wants to say something, but he knows he can't. The threats of suspension or detention were constantly following Braden around in high school. Recalling his years at Northside High in his mind, Braden now has a clear understanding of why he was a constant target of Mr. Crum. And now Eddie and Mark realize why Goldstein and Chucky were always such a pain in the ass in physics class. Since he is getting some valuable information, Attorney Davies asks Goldstein, "Were there any more instances in which money was exchanged for favors for Mr. Crum?" Goldstein answers, "Yeah, yeah. The Crumster paid me like $400 to get Egghead, Bark, the Goon Man, and the Big Guy to fail physics. Yeah, yeah. I tried to get them in trouble, but the teacher kept moving me to another seat. The teacher was always on their side. Yeah, yeah. That really sucked." Attorney Davies asks, "Let's back up for a moment. The Big Guy. Who was that?" Goldstein answers, "I don't know his name. That big guy who threw that heavy steel ball. Yeah. That was him. I let Charles in on that deal too." Attorney Davies then asks Goldstein, "The big guy. Are you referring to Robert Bradshaw?" Goldstein replies, "I don't know. They always called him bro." "Yeah, yeah. They called everyone bro. It's hard to keep them straight. Attorney Davies tells the court, let the record reflect that Mr. Goldstein is likely referring to Robert Bradshaw, who threw the shot put, which Mr. Goldstein referred to as the heavy steel ball, for Northside High School at that time. Attorney Davies asks Goldstein, did Mr. Crum, by any chance, tell you why he wanted you to get the four students you mentioned to fail physics? Goldstein answers, yeah, yeah. The Crumster said he's gonna lose a lot of money if those guys run at the track meets. Yeah, yeah. He was trying to fix it so they couldn't run. Having enough information documented in the official transcript to reopen the gambling case against Mr. Crum, Attorney Davies announces, I tender the witness, Your Honor. The judge tells Attorney Pohl, your witness, counselor. Mr. Pohl replies, this witness has no credibility. I have absolutely no questions for this witness, Your Honor. The judge admonishes Attorney Pohl, whether the witness is credible or not, is not for you to decide by decree, counselor. The jury will please disregard Mr. Pohl's last remark. Attorney Pohl has been walking a fine line during this trial, irritating both the judge and the prosecution. The judge breaks for lunch recess, which could not have come soon enough. Eddie and the other tribe members, Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday, after listening to Goldstein's testimony, have a lot of steam to blow off. On the way out of the courtroom, as they are walking toward the elevator, the group passes by Mr. Crum and his arrogant attorney, Mr. Pohl. As he is waiting for the elevator, Mr. Zunday gives Mr. Crum a long and hard stare with a look that could kill. Mr. Fraser, finally understanding what he was up against for years, also stares down Mr. Crum. No words are exchanged, saying much more than if there were a verbal confrontation. The group finds a nearby delicatessen where they eat lunch together. Over lunch, Braden mentions, so, Goldshit was Mr. Crum's hitman. If I knew that, I would have busted him up a little more. Maybe a lot more. Mr. Zunday adds, it would appear that way. Also, on Crum's list is that girl. What's her name? Terry Haynes, I think. Mr. Fraser exclaims, that's right. She set up Erica Wright before Christmas during her senior year. Kathy adds, and Haynes started a fight with Erica during indoor tryouts when Erica was a junior. Paula asks, I wonder how much she got paid. Mr. Fraser comments, this case is getting better all the time. Eddie comically mentions, we can't leave out the Chucky, now can we? Mark replies, from the sound of what was going on in the courtroom, Chucky was just a subcontractor. Eddie laughs, commenting, I don't have any sympathy for any of them anymore. Kathy laughs and points out, not that you ever did. Eddie tells Kathy, sure I did. The Chucky is still alive, isn't he? Paula comments, that's debatable. His brain dead. Kathy replies to Paula, at least that's not debatable. Mr. Fraser asks, I wonder what went wrong with that Chucky guy. Eddie replies, his mother blames it all on me. It's all my fault. Mark comments, it was the Bengay. It had to have been. Now curious, Mr. Fraser asks, what's this about Bengay? Eddie laughs and explains, when we were in 8th grade, the Chucky tried to get a whole year's suntan in one day, but he got a really bad sunburn instead. In the locker room, after gym class, the Chucky was asking everyone what to do about sunburn pain. So, I told the Chucky, put some Bengay on it and take a really hot shower. I even gave him my tube and told him to keep it. So, the Chucky put the cream all over his body and headed for the shower. A few minutes later, the Chucky let out the loudest scream you could imagine. Then, later that night, his mother called my mother and told my mother how mean I was to do that. So, my mother told the Chucky's mother how stupid the Chucky was to even try that. Braden comments, Chucky's problems go back a whole lot further than that. Eddie replies, yeah. To the day he was born. Braden laughs, and tells Eddie, I was thinking about that day when we were in the sixth grade, and he got his ass knocked out when we were playing dodgeball. Mr. Fraser asks, how did he get knocked out? Eddie replies, me and Mark were the team captains. Mark got stuck with the Chucky, so I told Mark to make sure the Chucky doesn't go out. Then, at the end of the game, it was me versus the Chucky. The Chucky threw the ball at me, and it took a few really lame bounces. So, I picked up the ball and threw it at the Chucky as hard as I could. The Chucky ducked and turned his head. The ball hit his head and slammed his head against the wall, and he went down. Braden exclaims, I remember that. We thought Chucky was dead. Mr. Fraser laughs and tells everyone, so, this is the stuff that you guys always talk about. Braden replies, you got that right. Paula adds, all the time. Kathy mentions, I could be wrong, but I think we all had the most unusual high school experience. Mr. Fraser agrees, replying, I'd say so. Until you guys came along, the high school was relatively quiet. Braden observes, and now the same thing is happening over at the university. After lunch, the group heads back to the courtroom, where Mr. Crumb's trial will continue. Arriving in the courtroom, they observe Mr. Crumb is seated at the defense's table, with his head hanging down, looking at the floor. Braden comments, from where I'm standing, it looks like Mr. Crumb is having a bad day. Mr. Fraser, totally disgusted with Mr. Crumb, replies, I think he's guilty of a lot more than meets the eye. Kathy comically asks Mr. Zunday, aren't you going to miss him? Mr. Zunday replies, in a way, I wish he was back. I get the distinct impression that Shapiro will be worse. I really hope they don't offer him the position permanently. Mr. Fraser asks, what has Shapiro been up to? Mr. Zunday explains, he's already trying to get the physical education department back under his control. But Noreen will not allow it. So, Shapiro is taking it to the school board. He won't get anywhere with it, but he has clearly announced where he stands. Interrupting the conversation, the bailiff announces, all rise. All attendees stand as the bailiff proclaims, hear ye, hear ye. This court is again now in session. The judge takes his seat at the bench and strikes his gavel, opening the afternoon session of court. After a few announcements, the judge informs Attorney Sims, you may call your next witness, counselor. Attorney Sims announces, the prosecution recalls to the stand Mr. Maurice Crumb. Mr. Crumb stands and approaches the witness stand. The judge tells Mr. Crumb, please be advised that you are still sworn in and under oath. Mr. Crumb takes his seat and is ready to defend himself. Hearing all the evidence from this morning against Mr. Crumb, Attorney Sims asks, Maurice Crumb, have you ever sold or distributed in any way any drugs, narcotics, or banned substances to the students of Northside High School? And please be reminded that you are under oath. Mr. Crumb remains silent for a moment, then replies, I plead the fifth. Attorney Sims asks, Maurice Crumb, what did you intend to do with the drugs you picked up from the abandoned house on 2nd Street on the night you were arrested? Mr. Crumb replies, I have to plead the fifth. Attorney Sims comments, the Fifth Amendment. I see. Knowing that she has Mr. Crumb cornered, Attorney Sims continues, okay, then. Let me ask this. Is there anything in regard to the testimony of Andrew Goldstein that you would like to refute? Mr. Crumb replies, I can't recall everything he said, so I don't know. Attorney Sims comments, Northside High School must be a most excellent high school. A student clearly remembers what transpired 3 years ago, yet you claim that you can't remember what was said less than 2 hours ago. How then, sir, are we expected to believe that you can remember what happened 3 years ago? As expected, Attorney Pohl exclaims, objection, Your Honor. The judge asks Attorney Pohl, what exactly is your objection, Mr. Pohl? Attorney Pohl replies, The prosecution's last comment was clearly out of line. The judge admonishes Attorney Pohl, telling him, "If I remember correctly, counselor, the defendant accused the witness in question of perjury. If you'd like, I can have the court reporter read the transcript back to you. In the meantime, overruled." The judge then tells Attorney Sims, "If you would like, I can have the court reporter read back Mr. Goldstein's testimony to the witness." Attorney Sims replies, "I don't think that will be necessary. I will, however, at this time, turn this witness over to my co-counsel. Being questioned by Attorney Davies is the last thing Mr. Crum wants right now." Attorney Sims takes a seat, and Attorney Davies proceeds to question Mr. Crum, asking, "Maurice Crum, did you really believe that Andrew Goldstein had the skill required to earn a position on the high school track team?" Mr. Crum brashly replies, "I don't know what that has to do with this." Attorney Pohl exclaims, "Objection, Your Honor. Irrelevant." Attorney Davies replies, "My question is not irrelevant, Your Honor. I'm trying to discover why Maurice Crum specifically wanted a convicted drug dealer on the track team." The judge replies, "Overruled. The witness will please answer the question." Mr. Crum answers, "I don't know if he had the skill or not." Attorney Davis' line of questioning might not have been allowed if Mr. Crum had not been granted hostile witness status. Part of Attorney Davis' plan was to get Mr. Crum to express his arrogance, leading to hostile witness status. Mr. Crum walked right into that trap earlier in the trial. Digging a little deeper, Attorney Davies asks, "Maurice Crum, did you really believe that Charles Black had the skill required to earn a position on the track team?" Mr. Crum again replies, "I don't know." Attorney Davies then instructs Mr. Crum, "Would you please explain to the court why you specifically wanted Andrew Goldstein and Charles Black to try out for the high school track team, when their skill level was clearly insufficient to afford them a place on a middle school track team?" Attorney Pohl exclaims, "Objection, again, Your Honor. Irrelevant." The judge proclaims, "Overruled. I want to hear this." Pushing the limit a little further, Attorney Davies tells Mr. Crum, "Let me back up. During tryouts, according to the coach's records, Andrew Goldstein ran the 100-yard dash in 13.9 seconds and the 440-yard dash in 93.3 seconds. Charles Black threw the shot put a whopping 8 feet, 3 inches. Those performances would not afford them a place on a middle school track team. So, let me ask the question this way. Did you want Andrew Goldstein or Charles Black on the track team to sell drugs to other team members?" Mr. Crum exclaims, "No. Of course not." Attorney Davies raises his voice and asks, "So, you must have wanted them to try out for the track team for some other reason. Would you please explain to the court your reason?" Mr. Crum breaks down, hammering his fist on the table in front of his seat, and exclaims, "I can't answer that question. They'll come after me and kill me. I'm just a middleman. I can't answer those questions." Mr. Crum is getting emotionally distressed and starts to sob, alerting Attorney Davies that he is getting somewhere. Silence comes over the courtroom as Attorney Davies looks at the judge and asks, "Your Honor, can we please have a sidebar?" The judge announces, "Will all counsel please approach the bench?" Attorney Pohl and Attorney Sims join Attorney Davies and the judge for a sidebar conversation. During the sidebar, Mr. Zunday sits back with his arms crossed. Mr. Fraser asks Mr. Zunday, "Have you had enough yet?" Mr. Zunday replies, "After hearing that, I really hope they put him away for a very long time." Mr. Fraser comments, "I really don't see how Crum is getting out of this one." Mr. Zunday asks Mr. Fraser, "You know where John Davies is going with this, don't you?" Mr. Fraser replies, "It sounds like he plans to reopen the gambling case." Mr. Zunday replies, "Exactly. This is bigger than I thought. If lives are at stake, the gambling operation is more extensive than anyone originally thought. Mr. Fraser observes, and Crumb is obviously getting stressed out about something. Just look at him. Mr. Zunday informs Mr. Fraser, John Davies is a really brilliant guy. Right now, he's outsmarting Crumb, Pole, and the judge. The court session resumes, and Attorney Davies continues questioning Mr. Crumb, asking, Maurice Crumb, you clearly indicated your life might be at stake if you answered my previous question. Then, let me ask my question this way. Is the person or persons who potentially pose a threat to your life involved in any way whatsoever with the drug trafficking and distribution charges brought against you today? Mr. Crumb replies, no. Attorney Davies asks Mr. Crumb, so, the person or persons who pose a threat to your life might be involved in some other illegal activity, say gambling for example. Mr. Crumb breaks down in tears and, hammering his fist on the table again, exclaims, I can't answer that. They'll come after me. I can't. I told you. I can't answer those questions. Mr. Crumb sobs loudly, hammering his fist on the table, knowing without a doubt that Attorney Davies is on to him. Attorney Pole exclaims, Objection, Your Honor. Conjecture. Attorney Davies smiles, knowing that Attorney Pole would object, and Mr. Crumb will break down. Answering Attorney Pole, the judge announces, Sustained. The jury will disregard Mr. Davis' last question. Mr. Davies, who asked his last question purely to irritate Mr. Crumb, and the defense, announces, I have no more questions for this witness. I tender the witness, Your Honor. Without a direct answer from Mr. Crumb, Attorney Davies got the answer to his question. Attorney Davies has just hinted to Mr. Crumb and to the court that the gambling charges against Mr. Crumb will be revisited. The judge tells Attorney Sims, You may call your next witness, Counselor. Attorney Sims replies, At this time, Your Honor, the prosecution rests its case. The judge then tells Attorney Pole, You may call your first witness, Mr. Pole. Mr. Pole informs the judge, The defense rests, Your Honor. Attorney Pole, realizing that he has absolutely no strategy to get Mr. Crumb out of hot water, does not want to dig a bigger hole for himself than he already has. Truth is that Mr. Pole has no earthly clue how to proceed. The attorneys make their closing arguments, and the jury is sent to the jury room to deliberate the case. Mr. Zunday, who is not used to sitting down for hours, mentions, I'm going to step out into the hallway for a moment and stretch. Knowing there is going to be a delay until the jury comes to a verdict, the group follows Mr. Zunday. In the hallway, Braden tells everyone, It sounds to me like jail is the safest place Mr. Crumb can be. If he goes back on the street, they are gonna rough him up good. Kathy mentions, He looked kind of stressed in there. I can't imagine why. Paula replies, He's stressed because he's hiding more than everyone thinks. Did you see those guys in the back of the courtroom? They looked kind of angry toward the end of the trial. Pointing down the hall, Mark asks Paula, Do you mean that guy over there getting a drink of water? Paula replies, That's one of them. Mark informs everyone, That's Mr. Crumb's rich uncle. He's the guy that came by Second Street when I was finishing up the iron fence. Paula asks, How do you know he's rich? Mark replies, He was driving a Bentley. They are not cheap. Eddie adds, Yeah, I'd say so. Mark then reminds Paula, And I built that wall around his family compound. Paula replies, Oh. That guy. Chief Gabriel and Officers Hayes and Garrison walk over to say hello to the group. Speaking for the group, Mr. Zunday greets them, saying, It's good to see you guys again. Chief Gabriel replies, It's good to see you again, too. We're all enjoying hearing the truth for once. Mr. Fraser mentions, I'm glad to finally hear the reasons behind all the crap we had to put up with for all these years. Mr. Zunday tells the officers, By the way, All has been relatively calm at the high school since Mr. Crum has been relieved of his position. Officer Hayes tells Mr. Zunday, "We still have our eye on a few others at the high school." Mr. Zunday replies, "So do I. Shapiro is at the top of my list." Officer Hayes replies, "He's on our list too." Turning toward Mr. Fraser, Chief Gabriel tells Mr. Fraser, "I can't begin to tell you how happy Erica is to have you as her coach again." Mr. Fraser replies, "Erica is only a sophomore, and she's already number one in the women's 440-yard dash in the division. And she doesn't have to put up with all that nonsense she did in high school." Chief Gabriel points out, "We now have the story behind the nonsense. You just can't make any of this stuff up." Officer Hayes comments, "Mr. Davies did a great job getting the gambling case reopened. He really put Crum in the pressure cooker. Crum was about ready to snap. If the judge had allowed it, Davies would have gotten a full confession out of him." Mr. Zunday mentions, "For some reason, Mr. Crum has always feared the police and the law. Now, it's very clear why." Officer Hayes responds, "He's still hiding a lot. He has money hidden away somewhere. The $58,000 that Mr. Crum claims he had wasn't his only stash. It's only the tip of the iceberg." Quite unexpectedly, Mark announces, "I bet I know where his money is." Everyone looks at Mark, as Officer Hayes asks, "Where do you think it is?" Mark explains, "When I was finishing the iron fence on 2nd Street, Mr. Crum's uncle, Alastair Crum, came by with Crum. Mr. Crum was kind of ticked off that his house was gone. His uncle hired me to construct a brick wall around his family compound. I subbed it out, but I went out there to check on it a few times a week. The wall is done, but here's the odd part. He paid for the wall in cash. I bet that guy is hiding all of Mr. Crum's money." Discreetly pointing down the hall, Mark mentions, "That's the guy, over there, talking to the guy in the suit wearing the gold chain." Officer Hayes mentions, "Eddie mentioned something about him at the end of last year." Listening to the conversation, Mr. Fraser comments, "This just keeps getting bigger and bigger with no end in sight." After 40 minutes of catching up, the announcement comes that the jury has come to a verdict. Everyone again heads into the courtroom, eager to learn the fate of Mr. Crum. Staring aimlessly out into space, Mr. Crum still has a sliver of hope that he will be acquitted. After all, the prosecution has to prove their case beyond a shadow of a doubt. The bailiff announces, "All rise." All attendees stand as the bailiff proclaims, "Hear ye, hear ye." This court is again in session. The judge takes his seat at the bench and strikes his gavel. The judge asks, "Has the jury come to a unanimous verdict?" The foreman replies, "We have, Your Honor." The clerk walks over to the foreman, obtaining the verdict form. The clerk hands the verdict to the judge, as sweat begins to fall from Mr. Crum's face. Time goes by very slowly for Mr. Crum. The judge spends more time than necessary reviewing the form and hands the verdict back to the clerk. Reading the verdict, the clerk proclaims, "In the case of the state versus Maurice Crum, the jury finds the defendant, Maurice Crum, guilty on all charges brought against him." Hearing his fate, Mr. Crum is devastated. Hammering his fist on the table, Mr. Crum is at a loss for words. Now that the trial is over, Mr. Crum's uncle, Alastair, comes over to console Mr. Crum, but to no avail. Mr. Crum is overheard saying to his uncle, "I thought you said you can get me off." Alastair replies, "I said I would do my best. It would have been most beneficial to your cause if you had not acted like a complete jerk today. Telling the jury stories such as you were sleepwalking were not quite beneficial for your case." Mr. Crum cries himself a river and will spend years in prison building himself a bridge. Kathy, however, is not at a loss for words, telling Eddie, "With all the shit that guy put us through, I'm glad he's going to jail." Eddie replies, "I guess we won't be seeing him anymore." Paula adds, "Ain't that the truth?" Kathy mentions, "Well, this has been a long day. Now what?" Paula replies, "You have to ask, girl." In unison, Kathy and Paula exclaim, "Pizza." The group heads out to the pizzeria, along with Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser. The following week, Mr. Crum appeared in front of the judge for his sentencing hearing. Since this is his first offense, the judge was a bit lenient on Mr. Crum. The judge handed Mr. Crum a 10-year sentence and will be eligible for parole in 5 years. The judge also ordered that, when Mr. Crum is released from prison, he would be ineligible to be employed by the public school system. If Mr. Crum had not agreed to the employment restriction, Mr. Crum would have received a 15-year sentence. But the prison sentence handed down is not the worst of Mr. Crum's problems. After hearing the testimonies of the police officers involved in the case, the testimony of Andrew Goldstein, and that of Mr. Crum himself, District Attorney Janet Sims has decided to reopen the organized gambling case against Mr. Crum. Mr. Crum will appear in court for that case sometime in the future.